Welcome back to the Deep Dive. I'm your host, and joining me as always to unpack today's document is our resident infrastructure expert.
Hey everyone, glad to be back. And I brought a really interesting one today.
You definitely did. Usually when we look at these infrastructure specs, we're talking about massive scale, right? Like data centers the size of football fields, underwater cables, satellite arrays, that kind of thing. But today, the document you brought to the table is, well, it describes something remarkably small.
Small in physical size, yeah. But the implications are massive. It's a complete inversion of how we normally think about the internet.
So we're looking at an internal, highly restricted document. It's titled Deresticular Stationary Tier Single Source of Truth, version 3.1.
Or the Sentry, as they call it.
Right, the Sentry. It's dated just a few days ago, March 2nd, 2026, and it outlines the blueprint for this device. But looking at the specs, I mean, this does not look like standard consumer tech. It looks almost aggressive.
It is aggressive. And I think that's the hook here for anyone listening. We are so used to our internet hardware being entirely disposable. You get a cheap plastic router from your ISP, you plug it in, you shove it behind a couch, and you forget about it until it breaks.
Yeah, and then you call support to complain.
Exactly. Ah. This document describes the exact antithesis of that. They call it a civilization in a box.
A civilization in a box.
Not there yet.
That is such a heavy phrase. It sounds like a Fallout shelter manual or something.
In a way, it kind of is. The goal here is to build hardware designed to run critical infrastructure. We're talking farms, remote medical clinics, autonomous home offices, things that have to run 24/7 without relying on big cloud providers. It's about high availability in a world that might not always be available.
Okay, so the mission for our deep dive today is clear. We are going to tear down this Sentry unit. We need to understand the weird economics of how it's built, this thing they call the white box integration model.
Right.
And then we're going to walk right through their actual assembly floor in Arizona to see why they are manually modifying computer chips.
That assembly process, the flash protocol, is where you really see their philosophy in action, because it's less like a standard factory line and a lot more like a surgical theater.
Let's start with the high-level concept first. The executive summary draws a really hard line between two tiers of devices. There's the Nomad and the Sentry. What is the distinction there?
So the Nomad is exactly what it sounds like. It's mobile, rugged, very low power. It's designed for roaming, maybe strapped to a backpack or mounted in a vehicle.
Okay.
But the Sentry is the stationary tier. It's the anchor. The document actually refers to it as the backbone of the dereticular network. It's not meant to move around. It is meant to hold the line.
And to be a backbone, it obviously has to be strong. The document uses the term hyperconverged device. Now, in the corporate IT world, that's a buzzword that usually just translates to incredibly expensive. What does it actually mean for a device that's roughly the size of a lunchbox?
It means they are collapsing the stack. If you walk into a typical small business server room today, you'll see a whole rack of gear. You've got a router specifically for directing the internet traffic. You have a separate firewall appliance for security. And then a server tower for running your actual applications.
Right. Lots of blinking lights.
Lots of lights, three different boxes, three different power supplies, and essentially three different points of failure. Hyperconvergence means the Sentry does all of that on one single processor.
That sounds incredibly efficient, but isn't that just putting all your eggs in one basket? Like, if the processor dies, you lose everything. Your routing, your security, your data, all gone at once.
That is the inherent risk, yeah. You are absolutely right to point that out. But the argument Dereticular is making here is that simplicity actually creates resilience. If you have just one primary device managing your entire digital footprint, you can defend and power that one device much better than three cheap separate ones.
Mm.
And that's where the software comes in. They call their software suite the Rios Trinity Stack.
The Trinity. Very dramatic naming convention.
It is, but it's an accurate description. It's basically a three-layer brain. So first you have pfSense.
That's the gatekeeper.
Right, the gatekeeper. It's not just a basic firewall. It's enterprise-grade packet filtering. It explicitly decides who gets in and who gets out of your network. Think of it like the bouncer at a club. But this bouncer is heavily armed.
Okay, so that's the perimeter fence. What's inside the club?
Then you have the Rios core. That's the ledger. Based on the document, this handles the decentralized transaction layer. It keeps the records straight. This is the single source of truth part of the document's title.
And the third part. The document specifically mentions this only for the pro model. And this is the part that really gave me pause. Kali Linux.
Yes. The auditor.
See, Kali is a hacker toolkit. I mean, I've seen it used in cybersecurity demos to break into things. Why would anyone put aggressive penetration testing software on a defensive home router?
Because the best defense is a good offense. The document calls it the auditor for a very specific reason. Most routers are passive. They just sit there and wait for a cyber attack to hit them.
Right.
The Sentry uses Kali to actively scan its own local network. It's essentially trying to hack itself. It constantly checks your smart fridge, your security cameras, your local servers, all of it, looking to find vulnerabilities before a bad actor does.
So it truly is a sovereign node.
Yeah.
It's not just quietly connecting you to Google. It's hosting your data and policing your network simultaneously.
Exactly. If the main internet cable on your street gets cut, a normal router just becomes a paperweight.
Mm.
It's useless. The Sentry, however, keeps running your local automation. It runs your records, your clinic's database, your security cameras. It creates a localized cloud that doesn't just evaporate because your ISP goes down.
To do all that, you clearly need serious hardware. You can't run a hypervisor and a hacker toolkit on a $30 chip.
Which brings us to section 3, sourcing strategy. This is where the document gets deep into the actual economics of building this thing. They use what they call a white box integration model.
This part is fascinating because it's a very calculated compromise between cost and paranoia.
Paranoia.
Well, maybe prudence is a better word. Look at their supply chain. If they built a custom aluminum chassis and a custom motherboard here in the U.S. milled completely from scratch, the unit cost would be astronomical. You're talking probably $3,000 a pop. It just wouldn't be scalable for the audience they want to reach.
Yeah, that makes sense. So instead, they source the bare bones, the empty chassis, and the motherboard from Shenzhen.
Right. The document lists OEMs like CWWK, Topton, and Protectly.
These are known entities in the enthusiast home lab space.
Right.
They are very well known. They specialize in fanless manufacturing. They mill these incredibly heavy aluminum cases with deep fins that act as giant heat sinks. Dereticular buys the metal and the blank boards from China because metal is metal and the economies of scale over there are just unbeatable.
But the document says they explicitly do not trust them with the memory?
Correct. The text is very strict on this. Memory and storage sourced domestically. They bring in the empty shells from overseas, but the RAM and the SSDs, the parts that actually remember your information, are strictly sourced from Samsung, Crucial, or Western Digital inside the USA.
So it's basically a trust sandwich. Chinese bread, American meat.
That's a great way to put it. It maximizes the hardware value while keeping the state, the actual data, on completely trusted silicon. It's a really savvy move to keep the retail price down without compromising your data integrity.
Look at the specs they're actually packing into these shells. They list a standard and a pro model. The standard model runs an Intel N100.
Which is a very capable, low-power chip. Honestly, for a basic router, it's massive overkill. It can handle gigabit traffic easily.
But the pro model, they call this the Deep Admin Powerhouse. It's running an Intel Core i3-N305. That is an 8-core processor, 32 gigabytes of RAM, 2 terabytes of NVMe storage.
To put that in perspective for you, the router your ISP gave you probably has maybe 512 megabytes of RAM, maybe 1 gigabyte if you're really lucky. This has 32. That is 64 times the capacity. It isn't even a router anymore. It's a full virtualization server that just happens to route traffic.
And the physical connectivity is weirdly specific, too. You have 4 2.5 gigabit Ethernet ports, which is incredibly fast for local transfer. But then there's this LoRaWAN antenna running at 915 megahertz. I actually had to look that one up. What is LoRaWAN doing on a server?
LoRaWAN is the key to that whole civilization concept we were talking about earlier. It stands for a long-range wide area network. Think about your Wi-Fi at home. It's great, it's fast, but it barely reaches your driveway.
Right, I lose it halfway across the yard.
Exactly. LoRaWAN uses a much lower frequency to reach for miles.
Miles, like plural.
Yes, miles. Now, it is very low bandwidth, so you are definitely not streaming Netflix over it. But if you're running a large farm, you can have soil moisture sensors 3 miles away actively talking back to the Sentry. If you're a remote clinic, you can track the temperature of cold storage medicine across a massive campus without running Ethernet cables everywhere.
Wow.
It turns the Sentry into a hub for the physical world, not just a gateway to the digital internet. It allows the device to literally listen to the environment around it.
Okay, so we have the raw parts, we have the heavy metal chassis from Shenzhen, the trusted guts from the U.S., and the radio capability to talk to sensors miles away. Now they have to put it all together. Section 4, the Flash Protocol.
Right. This happens at Node 3 in Arizona. And reading through this specific workflow, you quickly realize this isn't a standard assembly line at all. It's so much more manual. It's intimate.
It starts at Station A, which they call the Boneyard.
Kind of a grim name.
A bit grim, but highly practical. This is the intake process. They are manually checking for bent cooling fins or chassis alignment issues. They do a POS test, a power on self test, before they even bother installing the RAM. They are basically operating under the assumption that the hardware might be dead on arrival.
Which absolutely happens. When you ship pallets of heavy metal halfway across the world, things shake loose, capacitors break, they weed out the duds immediately at Station A so they don't waste expensive engineering labor trying to build on a broken motherboard.
Makes sense. But Station B, the build, this is where I really stopped and had to read carefully. There's a key highlight section here regarding a thermal upgrade. Why is this such a big deal for them?
Heat is the enemy of reliability. It is the silent, absolute killer of electronics. Remember, these are entirely fanless units. There are no moving parts inside. The metal case itself absorbs all the heat. The document specifically identifies RISC ID RTHERM01. That 8-core i3 processor in the Pro model runs hot. If it hits its thermal limit, it throttles, meaning it forcibly slows itself down to a crawl just to save itself from melting.
And the standard thermal paste from the factory isn't good enough to stop that.
Not even close. It's usually cheap silicone grease. It pumps out over time. It dries out into dust. So at Station B, an actual technician manually unscrews the heat sink block, scrubs off the factory goop with isopropyl alcohol, and applies a very specific generic sounding material. Honeywell PTM7950.
The document calls it a phase change material. It sounds a lot like marketing speak to me.
I know, but it's actually industrial magic. It was originally designed for heavy automotive and industrial applications. At room temperature, it's a solid pad, almost like a piece of tape. It's very easy to handle. But when the CPU hits exactly 45 degrees Celsius, it changes phase.
It melts.
It liquefies. It turns into a highly viscous liquid. And because it literally changes phase, it expands slightly and fills every single microscopic imperfection between the silicon chip and the copper heatsink. It creates an almost perfect permanent thermal bond.
So they are hand modifying every single unit so they can survive the desert heat.
Exactly. It transfers heat almost as well as liquid metal, but entirely without the risk of leaking and shorting out the motherboard. It's a manual, painstaking modification that ensures this device can survive running in a non-air-conditioned utility closet in the middle of summer. A mass-produced router from a big-box store would just cook itself to death in those conditions.
That is a level of obsessive detail you just don't get from a standard assembly line. Okay, so the heat issue is managed. Now they physically move the units to Station C provisioning. Imaging rack.
This is where the blank hardware actually wakes up and becomes a sentry. They boot it from a secure master key USB drive and run an automated script called deploy_sentry.sh.
And this script starts by tweaking the BIOS. There is one specific setting mentioned here, restore on AC power loss.
This is crucial for remote unmanned infrastructure. Imagine your unit is out in a vacation home or running a remote water pump station. A massive storm knocks out the power grid. The local battery backup eventually drains and the unit goes dark.
Right, totally dead.
When the grid eventually comes back up, if that specific BIOS setting isn't checked, the computer stays completely off. You literally have to drive 3 hours out there just to push a plastic power button. By forcing restore on AC power loss, the sentry wakes up the very second it gets juice. It self-heals the connection automatically.
That is so smart. Then the script installs the operating system, which is Proxmox VE8.x.
Proxmox is what we call a hypervisor. It's an operating system designed specifically to run other operating systems. This is what allows them to run that Trinity stack, the firewall, the ledger, the auditor, as entirely separate virtual machines simultaneously. It keeps them isolated. If the Kali auditor crashes because it did something weird, your firewall keeps routing traffic completely unaffected.
And then comes the security seal. The document says they burn the dereticular root certificate directly into the TPM 2.0 chip.
The TTM is a dedicated security vault soldered physically onto the motherboard. By burning the certificate in there, they are cryptographically binding the software to that specific physical piece of hardware. You can't clone it. If someone breaks in and steals the hard drive, it won't boot up on another computer because it can't find that unique TPM signature. It establishes a hard, physical hardware identity.
Okay, so it's built, it's imaged, it's locked down. Most companies would just throw it in a cardboard box and ship it at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Dereticular sends it to Station D, the crucible,
The Crucible. You really have to appreciate their flair for dramatic naming. This is their burn-in room.
They run two programs, Stressing and IPER3, continuously for 24 hours.
What they are doing is pinning the CPU at 100% load and maxing out all the network ports simultaneously. It is literal torture testing. They want to see if a component is going to fail, and they want it to fail before they send it to you.
And the pass-fail criteria are incredibly strict. The CPU cannot exceed 85 degrees Celsius. But here's the metric that really caught me. The chassis surface cannot exceed 50 degrees.
Right. 50 degrees Celsius is about 122 Fahrenheit. That is very hot to the touch. It is physically uncomfortable to hold.
Yeah. If I touched my home router and it was 122 degrees, I would panic. I would unplug it immediately.
But here, a hot case is actually exactly what you want. It's good news.
How so?
Remember that phase change material we talked about at Station B? If the outside case is hot, it means that material is doing its job perfectly. It's actively pulling the heat out of the CPU and dumping it into the metal shell. The shell is supposed to get hot. That's literally its job as a heatsink. If the case was cool, but the internal CPU was sitting at 85 degrees, that would be a critical failure. That would mean the heat is trapped inside cooking the silicon. The Crucible verifies that the physical thermodynamics are actually working.
Wow. Okay, so if it survives the heat, it finally goes to Station E, the outpost. This is kitting and packaging. And even here, just putting it in the box, they are actively addressing risks.
We saw the risk register at the very end of the document. Risk RSOFT01 is simply listed as user error.
Yeah, user breaks, Proxmox config, node goes offline.
Mm.
I felt very seen reading that. I have absolutely done this to my own setups.
We have all been there. You look up a tutorial online, you tweak one single firewall rule, you hit enter, and suddenly your internet is totally gone and you can't even get back into the router to fix what you just broke.
Their solution to this is something called the Deep Admin Rescue Drive.
It's a physical USB stick included right in the box. But it's not just a PDF manual. It contains an automated script. If you completely brick the OS, you just plug this USB in, reboot the Sentry, and it automatically performs a factory reset of the operating system layer.
Wait, does it wipe all your data, though?
No, and that is the absolute genius of it. It restores the golden image of the system files, but it specifically leaves the data partition completely alone. So you lose your broken settings, but you don't lose your actual files or records. It's a physical panic button that actually works.
There's also a brilliant solution for port confusion. Risk RNET 01. You have four totally identical Ethernet ports on the back of the device. Which one is the internet?
A classic networking problem. You plug the modem into the wrong hole and absolutely nothing works.
Their solution to this is surprisingly low tech compared to everything else.
Stickers. A blue sticker for the WAN port, yellow stickers for the LAN ports.
Best stickers.
Sometimes the best engineering solution isn't a complex line of code. It's just a colored piece of paper. It solves the user problem instantly and permanently.
And for the pro models, there's one more physical token included in the box. The sovereign key.
A YubiKey 5C NFC. It's cryptographically pre-registered to the device's unique identifier.
So it's essentially a physical key for a digital door?
Exactly. To log in as the ultimate root administrator on this specific Sentry, you have to physically hold this key and plug it into the USB port.
What does that actually prevent in the real world?
It prevents remote hijacking completely. A hacker sitting in a basement halfway across the world can fish your password. They can put a keylogger on your laptop, but they cannot log into the root system because they physically do not have the metal key that is sitting on your keychain in Arizona. It permanently bridges the gap between digital security and physical security.
It creates a strict requirement for physical presence, which again, perfectly aligns with the whole Sentry philosophy.
Yep.
It is your box on your premise, completely under your control.
Precisely. It brings true ownership back to the edge of the network.
So let's just step back and look at the whole picture here.
Yeah.
We have gone from a bare metal chassis built in Shenzhen to a stress-tested, thermally modified, cryptographically locked node sitting in Arizona. That is a massive amount of effort just for a router.
It is. But the document reveals a fundamental mindset shift. They aren't building a consumer appliance. They are building a utility. They are treating your local internet and your data like water or electricity. It is something that simply cannot fail.
The risk register really highlights that whole mindset. They anticipate extreme heat, they anticipate the power grid failing, they anticipate the user being an absolute idiot.
We're just making an honest mistake.
Fair enough, an honest mistake.
Yep.
But they aggressively design the physical workflow to mitigate all of those risks before the box is even taped shut. They don't just ship it and hope you figure it out. They engineer the solution directly into the box.
And I think that's the real lesson here. True resilience isn't just something you can download via a software patch. It has to be engineered from the ground up. You have to assume the worst case scenario, that the AC will fail, the power will go out, the user will mess up the config, and you build a system that handles all of it gracefully.
It definitely makes the little blinking plastic box sitting in my living room feel entirely inadequate.
As it probably should. That plastic box is designed for convenience and a low price point. The Sentry is designed for actual survival.
And I think that leads perfectly into something for you, the listener, to mull over today. This document talks endlessly about making this box indestructible and sovereign from cloud outages. But if this Sentry box holds the literal keys to your farm, your clinic, your smart home, what happens when the threat isn't a digital hacker, but a physical intruder? If your data is hyper-localized to one single box, a digital attack might fail. But what stops someone with a crowbar from just picking up the metal box and walking away with your entire digital civilization? Is hyper-localization actually creating a massive physical security blind spot?
That is a very unsettling thought to leave us with.
Thanks for diving into the Sentry with us today. It's been a fascinating look at what happens when you finally stop treating hardware as disposable. We'll see you on the next deep dive.
Stay secure out there.